Well, once again, it's my great pleasure to welcome into the studio none other than Lance Ketterling, Chief of Police of the Palmer Police Department. Welcome.
Good morning, Mike.
So the weather is obviously one of the biggest things that has changed here. I can say that. What we're looking at is a sunny, very pleasant day after day. And I thought we could begin by asking a question of, and it almost seems so obvious, what does this mean for the members of the department as they go about, other than wearing lighter weight uniforms?
Well, they'll be happy to be wearing their lighter weight uniforms, and they can kind of come out of hibernation. At any rate, during the summer months, we try to get just that much more active outside in the community and make a lot of more of those person-on-person contacts that we don't have quite as much opportunity to do in the winter. And we can do that a lot of different ways. And it's simply because there's more people out and about, and it seems like the town is almost waking up after 6-7 months of winter. So the officers will probably be out a lot more on foot patrol, just saying hi and greeting people and seeing how things are going. Later on in late May, early June, they'll be doing their annual business visits where they'll pay a visit to everybody that owns a business in Palmer. And they'll be touching bases with them for after our contact information, seeing if they have any new concerns, handing out a lot of business cards. And we do that every year, and we'll be doing it again this year as well. That, and with the increase in outdoor activities, various different festivals or events that are happening, just a lot more opportunity for positive interaction with everybody. And so the officers look forward to it.
Sure, sure. I mean, I just think about it when, since every day I walk over here, I walk around town, I walk back to our home, and I notice definitely if I were to compare January with June, I will see people in June.
Stark contrast to January.
It's an amazing thing. So while during some parts of the year, the dark and cold winter, et cetera, there are people that are staying within their homes, et cetera. And in fact, what happens is that I notice patrol cars going by more often in the winter, and they become more blended into the general activity during the summertime. It doesn't mean that I don't see officers if they're out walking down, et cetera. But because there seems to be more activity, people, et cetera, distractions from my eye, it's almost as if there is a lower level of activity, but that's not true.
Sure. No, I wouldn't say the activity level is lower at all. The activity in Palmer in terms of police activity is sometimes a little bit hard to figure. The public relation type of activities tend to go up at certain times, the beginning and the end of the school year, obviously the state fair and around any type of special events or festivals. But in terms of high crime activity, you can only make the broadest of statements about when these things typically come up.
Right.
And it's a mistake to paint the whole house with the same brush in that regard. So it's a unique little town. And so you can make broad statements, again, such as we tend to have more DUI crime on the weekends, or, you know, we tend to have more small thefts and vandalisms during summer months. But those are only trends in the very broadest of senses.
Okay. I was thinking about that. So do you, are there any changes? I know from time to time we like to check in and say you have a relatively small group of people who work for the Palmer Police Department. I know one of the changes that's coming up has to do with the associated move of the dispatch. So the numbers of people working for dispatch are changing.
Mm-hmm.
And talk a little bit about that, perhaps.
Well, MATCOM, which is over in Wasilla, will be handling fire and EMS dispatching for the Matsu Borough. The city of Palmer will continue to dispatch the Palmer Police Department and Palmer Fire Units for calls inside the city. So the sum total of that is that we are reducing strength to a certain degree in dispatch. The good news is that a lot of the dispatchers we had were very skilled, and some of them are going over to MATCOM to do the same thing they were doing here, just for a different organization. So the level of service that the public's going to be getting should continue to be extremely high. And they were very well trained, and they're capable, and we hate to lose them, but this is just the nature of things. Sometimes this happens. So we are going from an authorized strength of 12 in the dispatch center down to probably 7.
Okay.
And we anticipate being there by the end of the year.
Okay. All right. Now, that's the dispatch center, and other than being a voice, if someone is calling 911, the general public doesn't notice how many people or anything about that.
Yeah. I started out in dispatch, and that was a long time ago, 20 years ago. But they're a pretty critical part of our operations. They are that initial contact that most of the public has with the police department, and it sets the tone in some cases for the entire interaction between the police and the citizen that needs help. So, and they can solve a lot of problems right there on the phone. They deliver babies. They help treat injuries. They calm people down and just provide them some reassurance and help. They locate folks who don't know where they are. They're really an amazing group. It's an extremely technically challenging job. They sit there in front of six computer screens with a couple different keyboards and have to answer difficult questions under stress using complex equipment. It's hard. They're underappreciated, in my opinion.
Okay. Now, in addition to dispatch changes, personnel, are there any recent changes or upcoming changes in the rest of the staffing for the police department?
The city council authorized 2 months ago, I think it was, our participation in a federal task force regarding the Drug Enforcement Administration. It's helping combat the opiate problem that we seem to be having nationwide, but also in Alaska as well. And the focus is going to be on opiate and prescription pill eradication. So very distinctly not a marijuana-focused task force. And the goal will be to make Valley cases with our Palmer officer who will be assigned to that.
Okay. Now, you mentioned marijuana, and I know that there are increasingly examples of sales, retail sales, let's Anchorage. I haven't heard about Houston. Do you have any sense of when sales start up there in Houston?
I do not. Honestly, I haven't followed much about what Houston is doing in terms of that. You know, each individual city has local control authorized in the new law regarding that in Title 17. And so Palmer, of course, opted out of retail and commercial marijuana. So the question about what Houston's going to do, I honestly just haven't kept up with.
Okay, that's good. Well, that probably is worth a focus where we can talk to someone in Houston who's knowledgeable about
it. Sure, yeah.
But just to remind perhaps listeners who go to Anchorage and they purchase marijuana and they come into Palmer, there's no change in...
No, Palmer is just basically covered by the personal possession statutes in Title 1738. Yeah, okay. And anybody who has questions can look that one up. It's Alaska Statute 17.38, and there's a wealth of information in there about what you can and can't possess and where you can possess it and how much you can gift to other individuals without remuneration. And so, yeah, it's that's what the city has chosen to just go with is what the state put out for the personal use.
Okay. So I'm always fascinated as I watch vehicles go by, identifying whenever I happen to notice it, a new police car or vehicle of sorts. So I realized that I know that there are some older vehicles and some newer vehicles. And I know I watch three departments in particular. I watch the City of Palmer Police Department, and then occasionally the City of Wasilla comes by, and mm-hmm. I see them in a different color, et cetera. And then, of course, the troopers are in and out here.
Yep.
But what describe just sort of in a summary fashion the vehicle collection that the police department has. Are they generally older? How do you maintain and upgrade them?
So what we found is a guideline is, and this is only a guideline, is that the federal GSA fleet standards are a good place to start.
Okay.
However, we have who I consider to be just a top-notch mechanic over at City of Palmer Public Works. Danny Russell does a great job, very skilled. And so when we decide what vehicles need to be surplused or when it's time to cycle a vehicle out, we also rely heavily on what he has to say. So we have vehicles in the fleet right now that range anywhere from 5,000 miles on up to probably, I think the highest we've got is near 125,000 miles. Some are closer to 10 years old. Mm-hmm. And some we just ordered this year and haven't even arrived yet. So we try to cycle through a car or two. We try to purchase a couple new ones every year. And that gives us time to cycle out the older vehicles that are no longer serviceable and are starting to nickel and dime us to death in terms of repair costs. And that means that a vehicle will go from brand new to being put on the reserve line or the surplus, not the surplus line, but the spare line in about 6 years, maybe 6.5 years, which is a pretty good lifespan for a police patrol vehicle. So,
mm-hmm. Well, I've noticed, and I remember noticing this, back a few years ago, in some advertisements or even places that I had visited, where departments used what might be referred to as non-expected, non-traditional vehicles. Mm-hmm. Somewhere in Colorado Mountains, it might have been a Subaru, or I've seen even a few places that have.
Vail used to drive Saabs.
Saabs, for a right? While, yeah. Oh, a long time. I remember those. Yeah, or even Toyota Prius or. I saw the most interesting one, and this was a faux example because it was in a TV police series where the officers were driving an experimental. They were asked to drive an experimental smart car, electric smart car for two.
Sure.
It was laid out with lights, et cetera. But the interesting thing about it, perhaps as this example was that within the context of that series, the people who saw the car, because it did not present the typical appearance of a police cruiser.
Sure.
It looked cute. I wondered about that. I said, there's a psychological factor of having something that's sort of solid and recognizable or expected. And then if you saw something come by that's different, you look and say, "Whoa, I have to think differently about that." So,
sure.
What's your sense of the projection from a police cruiser?
Well, we select ours based on reliability and functionality. In other words, we select heavily based on what the vehicle can do, how many different things it can do. And you're right. When you go to especially larger organizations or organizations that have some unique roles, Highway Patrol, for example, which we don't technically have in Alaska, but you might see things like motorcycles or pursuit vehicles. I remember in Colorado, it's funny we keep coming back to that state, you used to see Camaros the highway. Those were strictly for traffic interdiction. And that's great. And a lot of those serve a very important role, but they also serve a very specific role. And what we found in Palmer is that we need something that is a little more mission capable for different things because we just don't have the size of a department where we can afford to purchase a motorcycle or a Camaro or something along those lines to do a very specific thing. We need a vehicle that can do more than one job and do it relatively well. So, I mean, it needs to do well in snow. It might have to go off-road. It mm-hmm. needs to be able to carry prisoners, which the Prius might not be able to do, although it's undeniably a reliable vehicle with good gas mileage.
Sure.
So there are some trade-offs. But we look in terms of role requirements. What can the mission do or what can the vehicle do and how reliable will the vehicle be? And that's how we basically make our selections. Right now, we're fundamentally fielding two types, Ford Explorers and the new Ford sedan. We have one of those. And that's only because the officer that wanted that vehicle is barely a normal-sized human being. He would have to run and jump to get up into an Explorer. So we bought him something a little more comfortable for him. We look for interchangeability of parts.
Sure.
In other words, can we buy spare parts for a larger portion of the fleet rather than unique individuals, types of vehicles that need spares that you might have to buy different sets of tires or brake pads or headlights or whatnot for one specific vehicle that gets to be considerably more expensive on the budget. So,
sure, sure. Got to ask, given the explosive interest in fat tire bikes, what's the position regarding bikes for officers?
We have some very old police bikes that frankly have reached the end of their service life. I'm sure that maybe Tony could tune them up for us over at Backcountry or something along those lines. But they are older bikes that are two generations old in terms of mm-hmm. things like suspension and just quality. We have found that foot patrol is a more productive use of the officer's time in Palmer generally than bike patrol. And that's simply because in foot patrol, the officer can kind of park their car in an area and get out and walk around in the area near their vehicle. Whereas with bike patrol, you can have a fellow on the other side of town who is now useful only for things that involve first responding or public relations. And those are important things. But on the other hand, it does reduce the effectiveness overall compared to somebody that's on foot. A lot of people like to stop and talk to the people that are riding bikes, but they also like to stop and talk to folks that are just strolling along and doing their foot patrol as well. So it's kind of it's a win-win. We found foot patrol works a little bit better.
Okay, good. Well, the topic that we typically address when you come in and see where it's going has to do with body cameras.
Mm-hmm.
So what's the status of body cameras?
We are using them and using them to good effect. The officers do like them.
Ah, good.
We're capturing some good evidence with them, and it does not seem to be an issue. The challenge typically is one of storage. What do you do with all these files?
Right.
And we have a good retention schedule for what we need to keep and what we need to purge and when we need to purge it. But it does generate a lot of storage requirements. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the challenges that especially the larger organizations have. And that's why some of these larger cities just can't afford to field these things, is because what do they do with all the data? We purchased a large server just simply for keeping some of this stuff that we need to, that we record. So
in addition to officers becoming more comfortable turning it on, turning it off, et cetera, have you noticed any significant change or evolution in the cameras themselves?
Oh, like everything else, I think they get smaller, they get lighter, mm-hmm. The definition gets a little bit better, the audio gets a little bit better. With every successive generation of that type of technology, that's typically what you see is kind of the miniaturation, if that's even a word, did I say that right? And then the improvements in the audio and video quality. So,
right.
And low light's an important factor in those, and so we try to select cameras that do at least a passable job in lower no light conditions. So.
Since we're talking about technology, and I know that officers are equipped to communicate with their own radios, mm-hmm. Both in the vehicle and on them, but also I've been fascinated just observing the penetration of smartphones into everything.
Yes.
I mean, they have become the personal communicator backup sometimes. Sometimes it's the first line of connection. So officers do have smartphones as a kind of a backup, or how do police officers use smartphones these days?
Well, I think that varies heavily from department to department. In the Palmer Police Department, they're used pretty much strictly for text or phone communications. Now, they can get certain things like they can get DMV photos sent to them
right.
on their cell phone. So if they have a suspect they're having trouble identifying, they can ask the dispatch center to pull up some driver's license photos of the person that they think they might have and compare those to who they actually do have. There's some interesting apps that you could have on your phone. Pill ID is one that gets used with regularity. There's a couple of different apps for that. And then just being wired into the community, because a lot of people seem to want to contact officers via text anymore, or, they right. don't, it's funny. Kids don't seem to talk to each other anymore. You know, you see two of them sitting side by side on the couch and they're texting each other. It's,
sure.
It's a little bit odd, but, at any rate, yeah, it's just kind of keeping up with the way people like to communicate. Cause first and foremost, that's what we need to do.
Right. Does the department have some encouragements or suggestions, or is this still in kind of an experimental, check it out, evolving phase?
Regarding smartphones?
Yes.
No suggestions or anything along those lines. There's a computer use policy which would cover the use of any type
okay.
of smartphone on duty, but no specific.
Okay. So we have also in the past talked about auxiliary police that are trained in the company officers sometimes. Mm-hmm. What's the status there? Is there still open season, or what are we talking about?
I believe we have three or four now of the reserves. They are just going through their initial training, which includes things like firearms, use of force, constitutional law, search and seizure. And they are out and active riding with the officers. They come in. Requirement is 16 hours a month, which isn't great, and that includes their training, but most of them come in quite a bit more and just want to get out on the road and ride with the officers. And you'll see them quite a bit, especially this summer, things like traffic control at fairs or, you know, there's a drug take-back program at Fred Meyer's on the 29th, and we'll probably have some reserve officers there as well for a little bit of extra security. And so that sort of thing is just really kind of their bread and butter about what they do.
Okay. Okay. And are you soliciting or accepting applications for additional people at this present time?
We actually just closed it, as a matter of fact. And that's simply because we have so many applications that we don't need anymore. We'll be able to get up to strength based on the numbers that we do have. And so they're doing background checks and a variety of the other things that are required for appointing a reserve position.
Okay. Well, that's good. It's good in one sense to know that there's that high level of interest.
There is, actually, and it's remarkable. It's very wide in terms of the socioeconomic demographics, in terms of the people that are applying for the position, and it's great because we have anything from very, very young folks that are just 21, 22 years old on up to older folks that own businesses or are retired and want to continue to do something interesting. So it's quite a spread.
Okay. All right. Mike Malevsky, I've been here with Chief Lance Ketterling of the Palmer Police Department, and we've been coming up to date with what's happening with that department as we enter, we go through spring seemingly rapidly heading towards summer. Do you have any last comments before we finish up?
Well, fire season is here. It's been dry lately, so I'm not the fire chief, but if he were here, he would tell you to be very careful. Make sure you have burn permits as required. And also, now that we're getting out and getting out in the rivers or camping or fishing or hunting, just make sure you do it safely. It's a great place to enjoy the state, but it can also be costly if you take chances. So be careful.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Chief Ketterling.